Welcome to Love at First Science, the podcast designed to dig deep into neuroscience, the human body, and anatomy. My name is Celeste. I'm a physio and I teach anatomy to yoga teachers. And this podcast is an archive of the lessons I've learned along the way in my attempt to bring a more science-based approach into the yoga world. Hey friends, thanks for tuning in. Just a quick reminder that I don't run any ads, so this podcast can only grow with your support. If you learned something new that you found useful, please do rate and review the podcast. And if you think the content can help someone get out of pain, improve their life, move without injuries, or even just feel more inspired, please share it with them. It would mean the absolute world to me, and you never know, we just might help elevate our community along the way. What a big honor and a privilege to have Meredith Wace, a physical therapist that specializes in working with scoliosis and postural imbalances, here on Love at First Science. This amazingly talented woman is not only a physical therapist, but she's a specialist in a specific scoliosis rehabilitation method called the Schroth method. And this is pretty advanced what she does, and the before and after photos that she shares of her clients are wild. And of course, being a bit of a neuro geek myself, I love talking to her about this stuff because she's also a specialist in vestibular deficiencies and how to rebalance that. And she's quite cool because she doesn't just kind of keep her blinkers on and work within the realm of physical therapy. She's also a yoga teacher. She's a passionate yoga teacher and she loves Pilates and she combines all these different modalities to help her clientele. So let's go and meet this incredible human that I am thrilled to introduce to you. This episode has been broken up into two parts and this is your part one. At last, Meredith Wace on Love at First Science, because you and I have mostly done Instagram lives together.
Yes.
And every time it's mind blowing. And every time I think, wow, I'm so into you.
Likewise, I've learned so much from you and from the whole community. And it's a great, great thing how you've brought so many people together and so much knowledge and curiosity. And it's just, it's growing and it's exciting. So thank you.
It's exciting. And it's, you know, for you too, because I know you have many different projects on the go, which I will get to. But before we just launch into all the things, let's talk a little bit about you and your journey, just so that people who are meeting you for the first time on this podcast can get to know about where what your background is and what your specialty is.
Okay, thanks. So I've been doing physio for 25 years. And my background is actually in neuroscience. So I have a bachelor's degree in psychology and neuroscience. And then I got my master's degree in physiotherapy. And I've been doing outpatient PT for all of this time. And then in about 2009, I began my yoga studies, interestingly, through kids yoga. That's a whole separate story. But I was enjoying the kids yoga so much that I was integrating it in my adult physiotherapy application. And I said, I need to know more about what's going on because I can't keep doing bubblegum breath and flamingo pose with my adult patients. So that began the whole yoga journey. And I completed my 500 hour and multiple yoga trainings, which just transformed me personally, professionally. And then in 2014, I began studying Schroth, which a whole different transformation in just mind-blowing ways, and then added Pilates onto it on a whole nother level.
So can you just tell the listeners what Schroth is? Because I think that might be hearing that word for the first time.
Yes. So Schroth is a method. It's an approach to scoliosis, postural and spinal asymmetries, where we work to bring the spine and the body blocks into its best possible three-dimensional balance. And then we work to strengthen and lengthen in that three-dimensionally balanced posture. So
amazing.
It's very,
and that's actually become your specialty, isn't it? Working with people who have scoliosis.
Yes. Yes. So that is 99% of my caseload. I'm also an international teacher with SSOL Schroth. So I teach and I certify physiotherapists in this method. And it's just, it's incredible. It's incredible, not only for people with scoliosis, but really all orthopedics, because it just completely changes the way we look at ourselves, the way we look at bodies, anatomy, and understand it, whether we are working on a spine, whether we're working on a shoulder, a knee, it's just fascinating. So,
and you are quite an outlier because in multiple ways, one, obviously you studied as a physio and then you took a slight detour towards yoga. But I know for a fact that the Schroth method isn't a great lover of the yoga practice. And I know many physios are a bit like, yeah, there's some good stuff, but actually, you know, and so you came along and actually as a true trailblazer, you were like, actually, there's a lot of value here. Let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's do some mindful cherry picking and merge things.
Right. And it's fascinating because when I wrote, I wrote and co-wrote one of our original workshops many, many years ago with Dr. Hagit Berdyshevsky, when we realized, because she was one of my original teachers, that wait a second, yoga can complement Schroth tremendously. And when I dug into the research and I was pulling out letters from the Schroth family to senior Iyengar teachers, there was a tremendous effort for the Schroth family to understand the intentions of many yoga postures and Iyengar yoga to work with scoliosis. And so they really wanted to understand and work with and not fight against it. Mm. And when you dig into the literature and the research and Krista Schroth's original book, so much of it is complements and overlaps yoga teachings in pranayama, in breath. The feet is the foundation. And it's very, very intriguing and very exciting. So
amazing. And I, you know, that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on the show, A, to give us a little bit of insight into what some of the practices within yoga are that are really beneficial. What are some things we could tweak? What are some things that maybe it's okay to let go of after all this time?
Right. So I think foundationally the breath, and I know you've done an incredible, incredible job, you know, speaking with Patrick McKeon and so many others, you know, James Nestor on that. And one of the most fascinating things that I have discovered in working with my patients with spinal imbalances, whether it's scoliosis, hyperkyphosis, people who've had lumbar fusion. So maybe they don't have a scoliosis. They just had, you know, some spinal surgery because they were having back pain, what have you, is the, I don't want to necessarily use the term dysfunctional, but the
challenging, isn't it? They're struggling with some things. Yeah. Right.
The, let's say that just say breath dysfunction, say it's irregular breath where their breath may be very shallow. Their breath may be reversed. So they may be a paradoxical breather. They may breathe primarily just, you know, through their upper respiratory system and their upper traps are just carrying them. And their diaphragm has no clue, not to their fault, but their diaphragm has no clue how to stabilize the spine and help to move prana, bring prana throughout their body and allow everything to move as a fluid unit because our thorax is a pressurized container. And if the diaphragm is not working properly, the muscles can't function as properly. So what's critical that Schroth encourages and teaches is really the importance of the breath. And Schroth is not a breathing method, but the breath is a critical component to it. And in all of the work, and just like with any exercise, the diaphragm has to be relaxed in order to create change. Our diaphragm is really, really rigid and tight from sucking our bellies in all the time. Everything else is going to stay very rigid and taut as well. So we
I'm so glad you just said that. I didn't even have to ask you about it. Thank you for saying that. I guess this is one of the things that makes me the saddest ever, is that after multiple pieces of high level education being pushed out around this topic, people are still sitting in the core camp going, squeeze your core, pull your navel to your spine. I'm like, guys, are we not past this yet? Like, there's so much evidence out there. Let's just stay up to date.
It's fascinating. And I think it's something, it's simple, but it's complex, you know, much like Schroth, in that, you know, the diaphragm has, it's one of our critical core stabilizers. And if the diaphragm can't function optimally, then the rest of the core is going to have a more challenging time. So if we can restore the natural physiologic mechanics of the breath, everything else will become more effortless. And that's very, very important. So that's one of the beautiful things about Shroth and overlapping with yoga as well. And I think one of the very important things, both in yoga as well as Shroth, is bringing prana, bringing energy into the body and then directing it in a certain way. So just like with a yoga practice, if we have a specific theme or a specific methodology to a class, you know, we want to begin maybe with movements that bring breath and prana collectively into the body, how we collect it, how we channel it. And it's very much the same in this, in the Shroth method, where we begin, we have an intention, we are staying very focused. So just like a yoga teacher when teaching a class, or if we are a student in a class, we keep our focus, we keep our steadiness. If our mind begins to wander thinking about what am I making for dinner, or oh wait, I need to send this text, then our pose starts to, like, we wobble a little bit in it. We have to stay tremendously present. So it's a phenomenal practice and opportunity to develop that focus and sensitivity to the breath, to the quality of the breath, the quality of the mind, and the quality of activation in the body. And if we are creating tensions unnecessarily, where can we soften and release those tensions that aren't helping us? So yoga has a beautiful term for that as well. Prayatna Shatalia. So where can we, you know, loosen the effort to then collect and stabilize where we really intend to connect and stabilize? And it's the same thing with Shroth. If we are gritting our teeth or, you know, clenching all over, then we won't be able to create the transformation that we are looking to create. So there's a tremendous amount of overlap in staying steady and staying focused, smooth. When things come into the mind, notice it, let it pass, come back to our focus, and we go from there and just enjoy.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What would you say are some of, I mean, I know you've touched upon, I mean, what's so interesting about things like Uddiyana Bandha, or guys, for anyone who doesn't know that fancy Sanskrit term, that is sucking your belly in, you know, actually, originally those practices were intended to happen in a seated practice combined with pranayama. They were really not ever intended to be combined with asana. This happened very recent history, really through Pattabhi Joyce creating the Ashtanga method. So you've touched upon that as maybe something we need to be a little bit mindful of, not overdoing, because that can obviously have repercussions. Feel free to expand on that, but also what are some other things that maybe it's how yoga is being taught now that's possibly not totally efficient for bodies?
Wow, that's a whole lot.
Big one.
How yoga is being taught that not be as optimal? Well, it's a hard thing in a way to answer, because there's so many different styles of yoga and everyone is attracted to a different style. What's right for one person may not be right for me. What's right for me may not be, you know, right for someone else. Hot yoga is incredibly popular. People have a love-hate relationship with it. My experience with it, both personally and somewhat professionally, is the people that tend to be drawn to it, and this is not anything bad against hot yoga. You know, if you love it, great, do it. But I think with anything, do it mindfully, you know, do it with awareness and presence and safety. And oftentimes in some of those classes where it's really heated and the body can get super loose, the people who are attracted to that are people who have more mobility in their body. They may have some hypermobility and they're attracted to that because they can do it and they can do it really well. But if there's all that mobility without an emphasis on stability, then, you know, down the road, as we are living creatures and under gravity more and more, you know, when we're in our 40s or 50s, that's usually when I see clients who have, you know, done practices forever and they, you know, it's part of their life. It's who they are. It saves our sanity. But without that emphasis on stability to complement the mobility, it can have, you know, effects on all joints in the body. And literally the same words from all these people is, I feel like I'm falling apart. And so
that is so sad that they're saying that.
It's fascinating, the same words, but when people have a focus on balancing the mobility with stability coming from a central place, that the stability isn't coming from the peripheral joints, but it's coming naturally from the center, you know, where we want the core to work naturally and reflexively without having to think to engage it. You know, I think about the time that you described, you know, picking up a glass of water, you don't tell your bicep to engage, bicep to lift. You know, in physio, if someone needs training on how to get that to happen, sure, that's one thing. You may want to give them verbal and tactile cues to teach the muscles how to do that. But ultimately, we want those structures to work 360 degrees reflexively to support the core, so that when people are doing things proximally, distally, that they have that central stability to protect all of their joints and allow them to do their practice, whatever it is, whether it is Ashtanga, Vinyasa, Hot Yoga, Bikram, Yin, whatever it is, you know, throughout their whole life, so they can enjoy it.
Hey, my loves, real quick, if you are hypermobile, be sure to check out my book, Too Flexible to Feel Good, where my co-author and I share the latest science on how to help a bendy body feel awesome. If you already have the book, please do leave it an Amazon review. It helps more than you could ever know, and it just might help someone else feel a bit more stable in their bodies. The book is called Too Flexible to Feel Good, and you can get it from most online retailers.
Yeah, I think someone wrote to me the other day saying, you know, is Ashtanga bad for you? And I was like, nothing's bad for you. It just depends on how you do it. You know, I think we have to be smart. And I don't know if sometimes I think one of the things I'm really wanting to educate people more on and really checking in with myself, do I do this sometimes, is we really buy into authority in the yoga world, and we are taught really not to question authority. And if the teacher has said, you know, do this in a certain way, we just continue to do that. We don't go, well, is this actually good for me and my body?
Right. I think that is incredible. And I think a couple of things. Number one, so many people in yoga, you know, we're on our mat, we're in a flow. And if we come to a posture where we need a prop, props are a good thing. They're not a bad thing. And we all have different arm lengths. We all have different body types, sizes. And, you know, for me, using a block in Trikonasana is critical. And, you know, it's fine at the moment, but maybe later on, I have a different energetic experience after the practice. Whereas if I use a block and I can get more elongation throughout my body, throughout my spine, I improve the prana flow, my joints feel a little better. And then the energetic effect after the practice is much more supportive. So I think encouraging people to, you know, have their props near them and take a moment and find their organization, find their alignment, and not let momentum move us through these fast vinyasa practices. Life moves us fast enough. Yeah. And our practice on the mat is a beautiful opportunity to flow and move and allow us to realize that we are in charge of our movement and not life pull us through it, that we don't have to move at the pace that everything is pulling us, that we can listen to our breath. And then this takes me to one of the other really important things I think that you were asking about in terms of practice, not only for yoga, but in Shroth and physio and everything else, is the importance of let the breath initiate and then the movement follow. And so when we allow the breath to initiate, both on the inhale, and then as the exhale initiates, doesn't mean you have to finish the exhale and then do the effort work. But if we can initiate the exhale, then that gives the diaphragm an opportunity to begin to stabilize the spine so that we are more fluid, stable, graceful, and we're optimizing the safety of our joints even better if we allow the exhale to initiate and then the effort to follow. Nice.
That is a really unique stance, isn't it? Because I know that lots of people will cue the breath, but they haven't been as precise with it. So that's a really unique, beautiful additional thought process that people can invite into their practice.
Yeah, because I'll have people ask all the time. And it was something that I questioned and really tried to understand so much when I first started practicing is, you know, there's all this emphasis on the breath in yoga. And I was like, okay, where's the inhale? Where's the exhale? And why? So everything for me is, I want to be able to understand, just, you know, just like you, why are we doing something? And I want my students, I want my patients, I want, you know, people who work with me, I want them to understand why they're doing something and why they may be choosing to modify or not do something. And you allow it to just become natural and part of who they are, so they don't have to like think around it so much. Initially, nice. It's going to be a thought, but then it should just become automatic and reflexive.
Awesome. And tell me a little bit about the scoliosis population. I'm suspecting a few of them are going to tune in. And also, most of us have a friend or a family member that has this condition. And it would be really cool to understand a bit more from your perspective, you know, what are some of the challenges that this population are facing and how can we actually support them better, especially as yoga teachers?
Yeah, wow. They're a phenomenal demographic and they're a phenomenal group. And I have enjoyed working with them, and the fact that I've been doing scoliosis day in and day out for, you know, since 2014 is a testament to what a great group of patients and individuals are in this area. And my heart goes out to them because it's tremendously frustrating in the amount of information out there, and they're overwhelmed. And I completely understand. They're not sure which information is accurate, which information is less accurate, where to begin. And especially for teens who have scoliosis, the parents and, you know, especially the parents feel like, okay, there's a very small window of time in which we need to do something. So we have to make decisions very fast. And if they do something and they, you know, stick with that for say a year or 2 years, that's a big chunk of that window of time. And they want to make sure that they're doing the best thing, you know, possible. And same thing with adults, you know, if they find out they have a scoliosis later on in life and they begin to experience if they have back pain, or maybe they just begin to notice some asymmetry later on, they are searching for what can be done about it. And of course, a lot comes up in the searches: yoga for scoliosis, Pilates for scoliosis. And I think some of the misinformation that's out there, and it's not misinformation in a malintentioned way, it's, you know, information out there from individuals' personal experience. And so their intentions are good, but it doesn't necessarily come from a place of physics. And that's what's very different about Schroth is Schroth is physics based. And so when we use things in Schroth called rice bags, I can show you some of them.
Yeah, go ahead. By the way, if you're listening to this as a podcast and you want to see the YouTube clip of it, it's on my channel. Please hit the channel and have a little look so that you can check out Meredith and her rice bags.
Very exciting. Yes. They're all tuning in for the rice bags. So these are the rice bags. They really are filled with rice.
Okay.
Some of the exercises that we do, the kids will like throw them down and one of them popped open and rice came flying out. It was like,
they must have been like loving it. Woo, confetti.
They were very excited. So these rice bags go under the prominences. So when someone is lying down, say they're in supine, and they're doing a particular exercise, whether in Schroth or if I have them doing another general exercise and they're lying down on the floor, these wedges go underneath the convexities. They never, ever, ever, ever go under the concavities. And so there's a lot of misinformation out there where people are putting these in the concavities thinking, okay, I need to put this in there to take up this space.
Yeah.
Take up the space so that when they lay down, they're level. But really, we want to use these under the prominences to help derotate the prominence.
Oh, interesting.
Where there's a convexity, you know, on one side, say if I have a right thoracic and it's out to the side and it's rotated back, then on the front, my right chest is often sunken in. And so if I'm lying down by using this wedge underneath, you know, and I derotate, I don't want to just lie down and shove it in. Because if I lie down and just shove it in, I'm just taking myself into more of the rotation. I want to do my auto corrections. It's something we teach in Schroth, and lengthen and elongate, and then use the rise leg underneath to help derotate. Then when I'm lying down, my chest is actually level. One side is lower down. And, you know, that's something else that's really beautiful in terms of the overlap between yoga and Schroth is this focus on the elongation. And so we want these long lines, you know, we speak in yoga about these lines of energy, and it's the same thing in Schroth. We want this elongation, decompression, not from external, you know, forces of, you know, traction pulling us, you know, not on a traction machine, but from within. And that's so much of what yoga teaches as well, is collecting the forces from within for transformation. So anyway,
You're a big fan of the rice bags. Everyone's going to be creating their own little rice bags. By the way, it's not actually the one you buy from the store, which you actually use to cook, but there is rice inside, just like a little pouch. So I'm sure you can make one at home pretty easy, hey?
Yeah, there are templates online, and there's an amazing lady in New York who sews these, and I've got a link for her on my site. And
okay, perfect. We'll link to her on the show notes as well, yeah. Meredith. Thanks for that. I mean, just hearing you talk about elongation of the spine, this is pretty useful actually for most of the population, not just the scoliosis population.
Bingo. Absolutely.
Thanks for listening. That was part one of the show. Next week, I'll be releasing part two. Remember, if this episode was helpful at all, please do share, rate, and review.